This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Subscribe to the podcast Beyond Politics. They host some of the biggest names and smartest minds. Beyond Politics is from a former Democratic congressman who helped ignite Barack Obama's campaign and a former campaign manager and political columnist. They go beyond the usual chatter on politics, news, science, and books. It's politics and everything beyond. On Beyond Politics, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Broadcasting live on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, and in the evenings on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Tuesday. Good to be with you today. This is a just jam-packed week. I'll get to all the people we're going to be talking to all week long. I'll talk about that, but I got a humdinger to start you off today on a Tuesday. Of course, we've talked about the Sexy Liberal Show at the Pantages Theater here in Minneapolis. And I should mention for the folks in Chicago, they're going to be in Chicago in August as well. But they kick off the tour coming up here, as a matter of fact, on Saturday night at the Pantages. And so tickets are still available. You can go and find the link on our website, am950radio.com. Part of the crew that's going to be coming through is a fan favorite of anyone who listens to Steph. It's Frangela, and they are kind enough to join us right now to talk about the show coming up this weekend. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hello.
Oh, it's nice to chat with you guys. Nice to see you again. I haven't talked with you in a while.
No, it's been too long. We are so excited.
Well, it's. I'm glad you guys are coming on in. I have to ask off the top here. You guys have been together now. Is it 20 years?
I don't like to do that math in public.
Well, I saw an interview you guys do with Tom Papa, and you guys at that point were saying something to the effect of, you know, it'd been about like 15 years, and that was like 5 years ago. That is amazing. I've got friends, but I don't want to ever do anything with them more than just see them occasionally. You guys are fantastic that way.
Oh, we don't see each other. We both have holograms that we interact through.
Yeah.
I've never seen her.
It's in our contract,
man. Yeah.
But you know what it is that when you make each other laugh, it's easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun.
No, it absolutely. Well, and it, I do have friends. I think the reason it's always different. And I don't, my wife and I would, no, gosh, that would not go well. And, you know, working together for a long period of time, that would not go well. Yeah, you know, like a friend like that. I mean, to be able to, it's like you're something even closer. I mean, it's I would say sisters, but I couldn't work with my brothers and sisters. So it's something truly amazing that you guys have been able to pull this off for 20 years.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. We have all of each other's information. Like, so it's sort of a mutually assured destruction kind of a deal. Cause it's like, we know each other's Apple IDs. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like that, mm-hmm. you know, and if you lose that or if somebody hacks you there, your life is pretty much over. Mm-hmm. So we keep it real and careful. Mm. Gotta be careful.
Well, you have to be. Stuff like this doesn't work just organic. It's organic. No. It's not something you can force. And mm-hmm. so that's brilliant. You guys have been there. I will also say, I think it's wonderful. You guys have, you've done a few shows. You've done a few individual Sexy Liberal shows. This is now the full tour back after the pandemic. Talk a little bit about that, about coming back on the road and going across the country.
It is so exciting and so needed right now. And, you know, it's so interesting when we get back, you know, we usually have a break because poor Stephanie has to get up at crazy o'clock every day, 5 days a week. And then to get her on the road on the weekend to then go back to that other schedule, it's a lot. So, you know, when we get to go out on the road together as a group, it's fantastic. And it's like we all need it. We need it, and the audiences need it. Because, you know, you've been sitting at home looking at this news, looking at what's going on in politics, feeling like you're crazy, alone in your room, and during COVID, et cetera, et cetera. Here's the opportunity for our community to come out and laugh and talk and get together. And that's what's so important about these shows. It's not just getting together and laughing, but it's the community that gets together.
You bring that up, and I think that that is so important because really the Republican strategy this year seems to separate and conquer, that sort of thing, you know, trying to get Generation Z to turn on the Democrats, trying to get the older generations to turn on the Democrats, kind of isolating people in individual communities and trying to make it more local, when the reality is we've got a demon creature that's running as the Republican candidate. And if we lose sight of that and focus of that, like that happened in 2016, this country is never going to come back. And I think having you guys come on tour and coming around, that's an affirmation that no, this is not just a local issue. You're not just by yourself. It's not just you there in whatever town you guys are in. This is nationwide. And no, we're all going to go out there. I'm going to go kick some ass in November.
That's right.
Yes, Angela.
And that's why, you know, Stephanie always says she's happy clappy. And I think we need that so much because, like, I don't know about y'all, but Maddow was hard last night. It was a hard, hard show. Like, at the end of it, your soul can feel crushed because you're, like Francis said, you're alone or you're in your home and it can feel really disconnected. But being able to go out and see people who are energized and excited to get together and excited about kicking this orange buffoon out, because that is my first bill, day one. I need a deportation of one immigrant child. We need this child, him gone. Remove his DACA, whatever it is. I want him gone.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we are here to expound on the fact that we're not alone. Mm-hmm. You know, and that we have so many things that bind us together as a community. You know, you may have never thought that you had so much in common with two black women, but let me tell you, when your liberties are up against the wall, and mine are too, we on the same line. We're in the same place.
Mm-hmm. Which brings up, let's talk one of the issues today, Arizona, which is, you know, Arizona Supreme Court. We're going back to 1856, a law there, or 1876 or something, where it's basically now abortion is completely illegal in the state of Arizona. And to tell you how unpopular that they, even Republicans know this, is Carrie Lake's already come on out and condemned the ruling, which that tells you everything. The reality is, we have rights being taken away. My daughter said it best. She said, I was born, I had autonomy over my body, I don't today. That's why I'm voting Democrat. This is a fight for all of us, and you know, they're eagerly talking about taking away our rights all across the board.
All across the board. Let me tell you, for me as an African-American woman, when a Supreme Court can reach back to pre-slavery.
Yeah.
Pre-Emancipation Proclamation and say, we're going to reach back to those rules. We are going to rule you on those rules. Do you know what that says to me? What that says to me in this country is we can go back and enslave you because we can go back to that rule. Mm-hmm. And that is what the white wealthy men of this country are making sure that they want to communicate to me.
If anything could convince you that they don't care about voting because they want to get rid of it, this should convince you of it. Because it is wildly unpopular. Mm-hmm. But they don't care about popularity. Their plan is to contest this. I'm not worried about us voting because I know we're going to vote. And I know I've been not here. Of a single person who didn't vote. I don't know what's going to happen to you. I will blank out at that point. I can't be held accountable for my actions if you do that. I can't. Legally, I can't. So it's like, I look at the situation. What we need to be focused on is getting them to understand it's not this whatever percentage they are of the Republican Party, the crazy town that you need to be worried about. You need to be worried about the rest of us because there are more of us.
And I'll say this, because it's to talk about how we're all on the same team. Black women won Biden in 2020. I mean, the black women were the reason why Joe Biden won. And thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And you're exactly right. These people are so threatened by the fact that their power structure is crumbling around them that they will embrace every dark age of our time, all the way back to the Salem freaking witch trials, to basically keep themselves in power. And the reality is, if we don't stop them now, I mean, I'm saying this as a veteran, if we don't stop this now, this country ends as a democracy as we know it. And so this it's on the table right now.
And for them, they're saying we're losing the republic, right? They're losing control of women's bodies. Mm-hmm. That you can no longer own a woman like, you know, something you bought in a store with a receipt and make her do what you want her to do. She doesn't have to feel like she got to get up and get married to you to have autonomy over her life. That is why they are doing this to women. It's because, and which is what the saddest part for me is that wealthy white men would rather legislate laws that harm people, are unpopular, than change, mm-hmm. than become better people, better human beings, become enlightened, do more with themselves. They don't want to do that. No. The work is on us. This is what's crazy about it. They're putting the onus on everybody else to carry the burden that they refuse to change.
It completely true, and it's also, it shows you how much the playing field has been tilted, that this level of minority opinion is able to control, and I'll rip on the national media as well. They don't go on out there. I mean, what did the Times called it mistruths? Just call it lying, you jackasses.
Thank you. It's a lie.
Just
but that's why we're that's why we're here. That's why we're here with Donald Trump right now, because we don't want to call white men liars. We don't want to call white men terrorists. We don't want to say that we breed white terrorists in this land, and we don't want to acknowledge it. We don't want to acknowledge truth about white males in this country, mm-hmm. because these are our sons. This is America's sons, mm-hmm. and we don't want to say that about them.
Well, and I'll say too, as a white man myself, who plenty of times will go into a party or something like this, and all of a sudden people let you know exactly what they feel. The reality is, when you see it, you can't unsee it. And when I saw it, I was like, holy crud, we got to change a lot of this stuff. And I'm persona non grata. They as opposed to realize maybe they could be wrong, they'll rather look at me as some sort of traitor. And no, you have to be against this. It really is criminal how bizarro land we have gotten. I tell you what, we got to take a break. I want to come back. I want to touch on you guys, Chicago. I was just in Chicago last weekend. It was fantastic. You guys have a little history there. We'll talk about that show. Talk about you coming back to MSP, Minneapolis, St. Paul, this upcoming weekend. Frangela taking some time, kind enough to join us today to talk about the Sexy Liberal Tour at the Pantages Theater in Minneapolis, kicking off on Saturday night. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show on a Tuesday. Day. Frangela, kind enough to join us. Francis and Angela. They are going to be here with the Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour. And they're at Pantages Theater kicking off the tour on Saturday. That's April 13th. You can get tickets at am950radio.com. There's a link there. And then I want to remind everyone, they're in Chicago for the DNC, which will be amazing. That's Saturday, August 17th at the Vic Theater in Chicago. You can get tickets there. And Frangela as well, I want to mention, I talked to both Fugelsang and Steph, and you guys in D.C. as well. You got a lot of great stops, but you guys are going to be in some pretty memorable towns this election cycle.
Yes, we are. We're going to be making them memorable.
there won't be anything else to do. I'm jealous about the DNC. I was just down in Chicago. I was at your old haunt. You guys did Second City down there, right?
Yes, we're from the second city in Chicago. And, you know, that's, you know, it's so funny where we have kind of ended up, you know, comedically, because that's what we do at Second City. It's social political satire.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and so this is a perfect fit of getting on the road and talking with and to and laughing with all of America. Mm-hmm. You know,
and well, and I thought it's interesting to say that, because when I just saw all the places you will glow. I was over there, like I said, last Friday night, and you said it right. It's there is political commentary of what is going on right now. For you guys, when did you realize, you know what, being, you know, comedy with a message, comedy with a point, like Hal has. Hal went from more traditional comedian. Now he's out there, you know, making the great fight, the great cause. Fugelsang has always been out there with, you know, on the edge of that. For you, when did it become really that, okay, it's one thing to get jokes, but it's another thing to basically use jokes to basically change habits and minds in America?
Well, I started at Second City when I was 15 years old.
Wow.
And
wow.
So, you know, and I started teaching when I was 18. So for me, comedy has always had to have a purpose, a voice, a POV. You couldn't just step out on stage for your own personal yayas. You had to come with a message, with a POV. So I don't think that I've ever done the other way, mm-hmm. actually. So I wouldn't know what it feels like to just do regular comedy, honestly.
I can't even, that is 15? What, on that stage? That's amazing.
Well, you know, I started selling t-shirts. I didn't get on the stage till I was 21. But, you know.
But she went through the program. She took all the classes.
And I taught and I did all of that stuff and I toured. But, you know, but the reality is that that's how we were trained.
Mm-hmm.
That is our mindset, is to talk about the zeitgeist, to talk about what's going on all of our minds, and to make us laugh about it so that we can get into maybe something. You know, one of our favorite things is when someone brings, a sexy liberal brings a Republican to the show, and they enjoy it, and they laugh, you know?
They know. They do know. They're just kind of in denial to a point. Let's just be honest about it.
Yeah, but we can't do that. We can't go with you on that trip down denial.
No.
We can't do it.
I'm the same way. I used to be a radio chimp that basically did music formats and stuff like this. And I'm veteran. When the W sent troops into a foreign country under false pretenses, military is great. You say to jump, they say how high. The only thing that they ask in return is you do not send them into combat under false pretenses. And the second that happened, that's when I changed. I said, okay, I got to do something else here. And I listened back to myself, and I felt so risky back then, but I was nothing compared to, I'm really a massive jackass right now. And so it is funny, but I mean, it's as we have seen this crisis come, as we, you know, you guys, Steph, and the whole crew, you know, radio people across the country, comedians across the country, the internet has basically said, no, we're not going to take the Republican talking points anymore. That's why they've gone crazier and crazier and crazier down this path.
Yeah, it's crazy town. And we can't, this is the thing. I don't know how you live in crazy town and then talk about, oh my gosh, I've been gaining weight. Like, I know that there's a place for that, and I'm not demeaning it, that I enjoy that kind of comedy too, a lot, but it feels like now is not that moment,
No, you know? Exactly. Minneapolis, St. Paul, you're back in town this weekend. You guys get up to MSP that often?
Not as often as we should or we would like.
Oh,
absolutely. And I have family there, so I'm so excited about seeing some things in town and visiting family. I have a lot of family there, so it's just going to be, I can't wait to get there.
Yeah, and you're going to be, of course, once again, this is this Saturday, kicking off the tour. Hal Sparks, John Fugelsang, Steph, of course. Cliff Schechter is going to be with you guys. I've talked to Cliff for years. He and I are friends, so that's going to be great. And you know, it's obviously, once again, a big stepping stone. I want as many people to go see this show as possible. So far, tickets are selling, although there's not many tickets left in the lower section at all. And I know, so if you want to get tickets, you need to kind of go get those right now.
Yes, right now. Like, what are you doing? Go now.
Yeah, come on out. You know, if you have been, you know, frustrated, feeling scared, fearful about the election and what's to come, come out and get with your people, get into a community so that you can feel engaged, energized,
safe.
And you will be amazed when I tell you that this is a community. If you don't know the sexy liberal community, you need to come get your butt out on Saturday night and come out and laugh, because I'm going to tell you something. You ain't been out since COVID. I know you haven't.
Come on now. You ain't been out. And this is the thing. This is a show you can come to alone.
That's
because
right.
you will. That community will take you in and love you, and you will make friends.
No, you will definitely relate, because I think that's the greatest thing. This is why it's so nice you guys are coming back. It's the relatable nature of this. It's so cool you guys are back on tour. I've missed you guys since this whole thing. And if you need any other reason, for 4 years, 4 years ago, when we had to stop all this stuff, that was Trump, and you couldn't do anything. Now we're back. You can go back on tour. Thanks, Joe Biden. Dark Brandon Rising. And I'm so glad we're going to be able to see you again in town here. Get your tickets. Once again, go to the link at am950radio.com. Frangela, it's an absolute pleasure to chat with you. I look forward to seeing you guys on Saturday as well.
Thank you so much. We can't wait to see you all.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciate the time. Frangela joining us. And once again, I want to make sure I remind everyone, this is not only going to be here in Minneapolis this weekend at the Pantages Theater, but in August, Chicago. You need to step up. Go to the Vic Theater. Catch the DNC special in Chicago. I guarantee you they're going to probably have a few big special guests for that. Saturday, August 17th, you want to catch the Sexy Liberal Save the World Comedy Tour show over in Chicago. Frangela, thank you very much. As always, once again, I appreciate the time.
Thank you.
952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I will say this for the local folks here. We got a bunch of tickets to give away this week. This week as well, tomorrow, John Fugelsang's joining me. That's going to be in the 4 o'clock hour locally, so you can podcast that in Chicago. Hal Sparks will be with me on Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. Cliff Schechter is going to join me for the entire show live in studio on Friday. Oh, and Stein's here tomorrow too. So, you know, it's everybody. It's everybody you'd want to see. It's going to be fantastic that way. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I used to travel in the shadows and I never found the nerve to try. Broadcasting in the evening on WCPT 820 Chicago's Progressive Talk, as well as on the mothership where I'm the big mother. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick is back. I missed him. What state or were you just at home? Where were you at?
We were in Central Texas for a couple days. We did not go for the eclipse. We left before that happened. But we spent a couple days in the greater San Antonio area. Oh. Fantastic Mexican food if you love Mexican. We got some great barbecue in Austin as well. Yeah. And headed home.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Have you noticed that about Texas? It's not okay, and I don't want anyone getting upset with me. I know that there's always everyone has a favorite place down there. Austin, it's just you can't get bad barbecue in Austin. It's a little touch and go in a lot of the other towns, and I agree with you. You know, if you're going to San Antonio, don't get the barbecue. Go get the Mexican American food. That's fantastic there. But yeah, you know, you go to Austin. Austin is like a really one of those meccas of barbecue. Just fantastic. Well, it's nice to have you back. And now, you did not see the eclipse yesterday?
I did not. I was driving through Wisconsin, and then it got cloudy, so I didn't even see the partial.
Well, that's Wisconsin for you. Thanks, Wisconsin. It was cloudy here, so it was so cloudy. I mean, you looked up at the sky, you couldn't even see where the sun was at that point. It didn't really even darken here. That's it. That's how cloudy it was. It was already it's kind of a wash.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those days that it's so dark you wonder how is it not raining.
Well, the Bring Me the News guys put out a video to tell you how desperate they were for any kind of eclipse coverage here in Minnesota. They've got one guy up in Sartell that they posted his video from, And basically, it's you can just barely see the outline of the sun. It's like, okay, yeah, there you go. Thanks, clouds. 952-946-6205. But speaking of natural things that could wipe us out, because once again, the rapture, not nearly as advertised. But hey, our next plague is coming up this summer. Trillions, that's T, trillions of cicadas will emerge across several U.S. states this spring in an event one expert dubbed Cicadageddon. Really? Not only are more cicadas than usual expected this year, but some of them will be zombie cicadas. What? They're infected by a sexually transmitted fungus that makes them hypersexual. Tell me more about this fungus. That's all we need. These poor cicadas buried in the ground for over a decade. And here comes some guys like, there's a fungus on there. Makes you kind of a stud. You don't want to know what they're going to do to the cicada after that. You do not want to know. Periodic cicadas spend most of their lives underground and only emerge after 13 or 17 years. They're big into prime numbers. This year, two broods of cicadas will emerge. Brood 19, which comes out every 13 years, will emerge in Georgia and the Southeast. Brood 8 emerges every 17 years. They're going to appear in Illinois. How dare you? They're relatively harmless. They just make a hell of a lot of noise. I mean, for one of those suckers, they are loud, man. And then they leave their body husks everywhere. Have you noticed that? You know, just you'll find the husks everywhere.
Yep.
I'm glad one of the things that evolution took care of for us is us shedding husks. I'm glad we don't do that anymore. That would be creepy. With this convergence, the bugs will arrive in numbers that have not been seen in generations. Matthew Casson, an associate professor of micrology and forest pathology in West Virginia University, by the way, worst NCIS ever, says both of those broods can be infected by the fungal pathogen called Massapora cincadia. Once the cicadas emerge from the ground, they'll molt into adults, and within a week to 10 days, the fungus causes the backside of their abdomen to open up. Usually you have to go to a Pilates class for that. A chalky white plug erupts out, taking over their bodies and making their genitals fall off. Okay, so before you do anything with those cicadas, dudes, do not do anything with those cicadas. This is not one we need to jump species here, okay? You're sitting there having a pot pie. Oh my God! What happened? I was just rubbing cicadas down there, and now the cicada continues to participate in normal activities like it was healthy. That's a bit of ambivalence. Kassan told the CBS News, like it tries to mate. It flies around and walks on plants. Yes, its third of its body has been replaced by fungus. It's really kind of bizarre. This next season I'm blanking on the show. Oh, the fungus show on HBO. What is that one then? Oh God, the rest of us, the last of us. This next episode, this next season of Last of Us is going to be. I lost a third of my body, and the fungus has taken over. There you go. The reason that cicadas might be able to ignore the fungus is it produces an amphetamine, which could also give them stamina. Okay. There's something else unusual about it outside of the entire lower third of their bodies falling off and then basically thinking that they're, you know, go team go. There's this hypersexualized behavior. So males, for example, will continue to try to mate with females unsuccessfully. Yeah, it's what it is. Because, again, the back end is a fungus. Speed dating is just not what it's cracked out to be. But they'll also pretend to be females to get males to come to them. And that doubles the number. That's cool, man. I no problem with that, man. You live your life. You be happy, all right? It's the cicadas in Georgia that are going to have trouble because they want to regulate those bedrooms. Get your freak on, man. I'm all over that. I'm all over that action. Well, it doubles the number of cicadas that are infected individually come into contact with them. Usually male cicadas will let out a loud humming sound to attract a female cicadas. And the females will flick her wings to signal she wants to mate.
but the fungus has males flicking their wings like females to attract males and in turn infect them. All right. So, you know, STDs in the cicada world apparently are a thing. In that way, the fungus is sexually transmittable, so it spreads like an STD, as advertised. Kasson also said the fungus originates. It's unclear. It's a lot of it's still unclear because there's a lot that happens below our feet. I'm presuming under the ground, not, you know, check your feet, I guess. The fungus produces spores on the cicadas, and it's suspected that when the cicadas die, the spores get into the soil and infect other cicadas underground. In the month leading up to them emerging all together in a spectacular fashion, they're waiting their subsurface for the soil to reach 64 degrees. It's suspected the cicadas are infected, and they're waiting underground. And when they're born, they dig themselves into the soil, coming in contact with the fungus spores. Fungus usually needs a host, like an insect, to carry the spores to spread the infection. Then it kills the host. It's suspected the fungus lays dormant for years, has become a puppet master. When the cicadas reach adulthood, because this is such a bizarre life cycle for an insect, the fungus has to stay to change its strategy. So it basically keeps the host alive long enough to maximize dispersal and, you know, to have sex with everything. I used to have a cousin like this. You have to use the hose. It's just, you know, down boy. Sorry. No, I did not have a cousin like this. I have not had to turn the anti-sex hose on a cousin. Okay, I just want to make sure I clear that up. All right. Kasson urges people not to eat the cicadas or kill them, but to take photos if they see fungus on the bugs and share them with online science communities like iNaturalist to help researchers. So once again, apparently there's a need to have to tell people, don't eat the large bugs that are buzzing really loud, or to kill them. But if you're out there just, I don't know, bug curious, and you want to look around and see if you can find any of the, you know, lower third less cicadas with a big fungus bulb down there, got to pay extra for that usually. Sorry. Fungus bulb, you say? I'm aroused. Don't eat them. All right. It's not snacking time. I don't care if you have a bowl of ranch dipping sauce in your hand. Do not eat the cicadas. It's the least you could do to show me that you actually have some sort of level of normalcy. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Forgive me for that entire last story. I am sorry. Well, not really. But, you know, think about that story when you go out dating this weekend. Just like I was saying, just, you know, and laugh and laugh and laugh. 952-946-6205. The Arizona Supreme Court, I mentioned this with Frangela when they were on with me earlier. The Arizona Supreme Court ruled to make abortion largely illegal in the Grand Canyon state, reinstating a 160-year-old law that forbids all procedures except those to save a woman's life. Justice John R. Lopez IV, writing the court's 4-2 split decision that the 2022 law allowing abortions up to 15 weeks of gestation depended on the existence of a federal constitutional right to abortion. And since the U.S. Supreme Court eliminated that right in Dobbs versus Jackson's Women's Health Organization ruling 2 years ago, that law can't overrule the first one passed in 1864 when Arizona was a territory. Absent the federal constitutional abortion right, and because the 15-week abortion law doesn't allow independently authorized abortion, there's no provision in federal or state law prohibiting the 1864 law's operation. Accordingly, the 1869 law is now enforceable, Lopez wrote. Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays called the ruling unconscionable and an affront to freedom. Make no mistake, by effectively striking down the law past this century and replacing one from 160 years ago, the court has risked the health of lives of Arizonans. Mayor said in a written statement, today's decision to reimpose a law from the time when Arizona wasn't a state, the Civil War was raging and women couldn't even vote, will go down in history as a stain on our state. The ban will go into effect in 14 days. The dilemma arose in the summer of 2022 after the Supreme Court eliminated the constitutional right of abortion, sent the power to regulate the procedure back to the states. Then Arizona Attorney General Mark Bronovich went to court to reinstate the 1864 abortion ban and convinced the trial court judge that Civil War era law should be enforced instead of the 15-week ban passed just months earlier. The consequences for reproductive health in Arizona were instantaneous. An uncertain legal landscape led the majority of the state's 9 abortion clinics to provide intermittent services for a month. The 1864 law carries with it a 2 to 5 year mandatory prison sentence for doctors who perform abortions for any reason other than saving a patient's life. And the 2022 law punishes doctors with a class 6 felony and a revoked license. Women were cut off from potentially life-saving care as the abortion rate saw record lows that year, whereas abortions in Arizona have consistently exceeded 13,000 since 2011. In 2022, that number plummeted to just 11,407, with 2 conflicting statutes on the books, uncertain doctors shutting their doors rather than risk prison time, and state officials vying to over which ban to implement. Arizona courts were tasked with figuring out how to make the laws coexist, and they chose the wrong path. Proponents of the near-total ban argued the 2022 law included a provision that stated it wasn't meant to repeal any laws that came before it, signifying that the 1864 law should reign supreme, but reproductive rights advocates pushed back, pointing out that the 1864 law wasn't overruled by the 15-week law based on interpretation, then neither were the numerous abortion law restrictions enacted in Arizona in 50 years since Roe v. Wade was decided, and keeping in place laws that mandated an ultrasound, a 24-hour waiting period, and an uninformed consultation, among other requirements, meant the abortion must be preserved to some extent. Like I said, Carrie Lake, to tell you the impact of this. Now, by the way, I do not feel sorry for the Republicans in any capacity, because they stocked these state Supreme Courts with these extremist zealots. In Arizona, there's a video running around of apparently a group of Republican politicians praying in tongues. I'm not sure if it's the House or the Senate floor for this ruling to come down this way. This is a minority opinion that basically probably just cost, Trump Arizona. Because I guarantee you, right now, every Republican's like, well, I don't think that we should go back to 1864. Well, every Democrat is like, see, this is the party that says we're no longer just about abortion. We're no longer just this. This is the party. And you know what? It is who they are. They're basically betrothed to a very small portion of their party, and they will take every right away from you to appease that far right bit of loonballism. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show. I feel so out of place. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday. Good to have you with me today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's crazy. And by the way, Carrie Lake is running right now from this ruling in Arizona like a Democrat. She's like, I demand that the Democratic governor and the House and Senate here in Arizona come up with a solution that makes sure we ensure women's rights. I mean, it is amazing. I mean, this is a year and a half, or excuse me, 2.5 years after, about 2 years since the overturning of Roe. And Republicans have tried everything, and now they're to the point of, believe me, I'm a Democrat now on this issue. Boy, oh boy. I don't know how this is going to go over, because once again, this is a Republican Party that has become, and nothing highlights the incompetency of the Republican Party than what is going on in the U.S. House right now. Where today, and in case you missed it, apparently Marjorie Taylor Greene, Representative Roid Rage from Georgia, she's basically threatening to throw out Speaker Johnson. She's threatened to trigger a no-confidence vote against Johnson in a repeat of the leadership squabble that turned the House into a circus for several weeks last fall. It's essentially the same drama as before. Green and other House hardliners are mad at Johnson for avoiding a government shutdown by allowing the House to vote on a funding bill that passed with Democratic support. Mike Johnson worked with the Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer rather than with us and gave Joe Biden and the Democrats everything they wanted. Green wrote on a Tuesday letter that complained about the government's supposed trans agenda and the legal plight of Donald Trump supporters who rioted at the Capitol January 6th. Once again, jail the traitors. That's all I got to say. Greene and the members, and by the way, have we seen, do we know exactly what Marjorie Taylor Greene was up to that day? Speaking of jailing the traitors. Greene and members of the far-right House Freedom Caucus argue that if Johnson drove a harder bargain with Democrats who control the Senate and the White House, Republicans could force them to accept GOP policy priorities. In reality, the likelier outcome would be a governmental shutdown. And that's the reality, is that, you know, and this is the catch-22 that McCarthy caught himself in, that Ryan caught himself in. I mean, all of these guys, they have this far-right group that says, we can force our agenda on them. And no, you first got to get past the Senate, which you're not going to do. Then even if you did manage to get past the Senate, you're not going to get it past Joe Biden. And then you do not have the votes to overturn it. So all you do is basically shut down the government, which they did once before and only had to go with their tail between the legs after they cost the country a few billion dollars to basically say, we proved our point, so we're going to reopen the government. No, you didn't prove anything. And this is the mentality they have. They feel as if, let's not mistake anything, all these guys in this far-right caucus, they know they probably couldn't win a statewide race. I mean, they're all House members. So they couldn't win a statewide race. Marjorie Taylor Greene would get destroyed in a Senate race in her state. She would not make a governor's race. So for them, if they've got these real Machiavellian ideas of power and where they could be, for them, they have to basically take control of the system that's already in place and demand all the Republicans vote in line with them. I have zero doubt she even thinks to herself that maybe she could convert this into being the Speaker of the House herself. But the reality is Johnson gets in there and realizes, I mean, it's either I pass a bill that has a chance of getting passed, or I don't pass a bill that has a chance of getting passed, or I don't pass any bill at all, and we end up shutting down the government and everyone blames the Republicans. And once again, yesterday I was talking about unforced errors within the Republican Party, that across the country they're bringing up these extremist conspiracy theory laws and trying to run them during an election cycle. And they, you know, these sort of things really kill their base. You can scream about the border all day long, but if you're out there saying that sheriffs can arrest planes because of chemtrails, guess what? You're not going to, it's not going to be something where you're going to, you're not going to be able to get past it. I mean, let's just be honest with it. Greene filed a motion to oust Johnson last month, but declined to force a vote, describing her move as a warning. Her letter on Tuesday amplified the warning, but didn't say it would invoke the privilege afforded to the House members to make the vote actually happen. Once again, one of the dumbest decisions ever, when they said, oh yeah, sure, you can throw me out of office anytime you want to. Without saying so directly, Greene suggested Johnson's fate could hinge on whether he allows the House to vote on a $60 billion military aid package to help Ukraine defend itself from Russian invasion. The money is a top priority for many lawmakers in both parties, but Greene and a fraction of the far-right Republicans oppose it. Recent polling shows that 70% of Americans want a peace deal in Ukraine, not to send them more of their hard-earned tax dollars, Greene wrote, referring to a Harris poll and the Quincy Institute. Another recent survey, though, by the Associated Press, 62% of Americans said either that the U.S. should take more active role in the Ukraine-Russia war or that the current U.S. involvement is about right. Johnson has not said whether the Ukraine vote will happen. A spokesperson did not immediately respond for a request for comment. I got to believe at this point that Johnson doesn't want the job anymore. I don't think anyone who's going to take this job wants this job. That's why I think that my down deep inside, I'm wondering if this is just a ploy by Marjorie Taylor Greene to make herself Speaker of the House prior to, you know, the election, which for her, once again, this is a group of Republicans, this far right extremist group of Republicans. They are only in this for their Twitter trolls. They are only in this for the self-gratifying nature of basically getting a bunch of losers saying, you got them. And that's all they're in it for. They're not in it for winning. They're not in it for legislating. They're not in it for anything else. And the Republicans, the mistake they made, and once again, they had so much power in 2010 after the Democrats stayed home. They rewrote all these jurisdictions to where a turnip with an R next to its name could win that race. And the problem is when you made such districts, which were so impossible for the Democrats to compete in, you in turn created a district where the only option was to go from a traditional Republican to the insane far-right Republicans. And this is what you get. This is what you get. I don't feel sorry for them. They have brought this all on. But I can tell you right now, if they have another speaker debacle, they can't get anything done. If Marjorie Taylor Greene keeps running her mouth, as more states keep passing these atrocious laws taking away women's rights, well, you know what? It's going to make it worse and worse for them come November. Absolutely. Oh, and then there's Trump's trials. That's not going to help either. Chicago, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Minneapolis, St. Paul, hour two up next. Portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Hey, it's the Matt McNeil Show on your Tuesday 4 o'clock hour here. Matt, Patrick, Brett is in studio here. Kind of odd. You've had to do the producing here. Now I got Patrick back after his vacation there.
And I am pre-recorded right now. You're just using a touch board to play audio from me for responses.
tell me about your fungus bulb. There you go.
That was wonderful, Matt. Thank you for asking.
Okay. No, we're not going to spend time talking about fungus bulbs. What we are going to talk about is we have got a ton of giveaways. Now, once again, I want to reiterate the lineup of guests I've got this week alone. We've got Stein tomorrow in his usual spot. Then we got Fugelsang in 4 o'clock hour. We got Hal Sparks in the 3 o'clock hour on Thursday. I got 2 hours with Cliff Schechter in studio with us. By the way, can we clean this place? Seriously, this place. I'm gonna have my friends over. I'm embarrassed, man. All right. We're gonna have Cliff in studio for 2 hours, and then that's. I'm looking forward to that. Sexy Liberal on Saturday. Apparently, I get about a minute on the stage.
Oh,
yeah. I'll be moving fast left and right. I'll be moving fast left and right. No, can't target me. I know how to evade. Go U.S. Army. Looking forward to that. And then we, of course, Sexy Liberal, Pantages Theater, coming up here on Saturday night. The pregame event we've got is On the Rocks on the Nicollet Diner down on 13th and Nicollet. We are going to be there starting at 4:30, is it?
That is correct, 4:30 at On the Rocks.
To join us there, you can just buy tickets. Now, first of all, obviously, you have to buy tickets to go to Sexy Liberal. If you'd like to do that, go to am950radio.com. You can find the link there, and you can buy tickets there. If you want to join us for the pregame festivities, you are more than welcome to do that. Same thing, you have to buy tickets for that. That's a ticketed event. That's On the Rocks, once again, on Saturday. You can get tickets there. We are going to be giving away every day this week. So today, I've got a pair of tickets to go to the Sexy Liberal show and a pair of tickets to the pre-party. That's today. Wednesday, we're going to give away a pair of tickets to Sexy Liberal and a pair of tickets to the pre-party. On Wednesday, on Thursday, I'm going to give away a pair of tickets and a pair of tickets to the pre-party. That's all one package. Each day, a caller each day is going to win both sets of tickets, and you get to join us for the entire evening of fun that's coming up on Saturday. On top of that, we're also going to be looking at the Wheel of Destiny returning. This is going to be on Wednesday, tomorrow. During that show, we are going to give away 5 pairs of tickets and pre-party passes. So you get tickets to the Sexy Liberal show and you get tickets to the pre-party. That is tomorrow, Wheel of Destiny. I'm not going to have to do a show tomorrow, man.
Yeah, you can just spin the wheel and...
Clickety, click. Because I got Stein and then Fugelsang and then I got the wheel.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
I'm mailing it in tomorrow. I'm loving that. I can't sleep during the show like usual, though, with Schechter. So, I mean, because when he's in studio coming up here on Friday... So looking forward to this. So a lot to do. So today, we are going to be giving away a pair of tickets and a pair to go to the pre-party, the tailgate event per se for that. So we're looking forward to that as well. Oh my God. Is that Gregory Rich?
I think it is
Gregory Rich. Come on in here, man. Come on in. You started poking your nose around out there. You'll have to lean in on his mic there. So, how are you, Gregory?
I'll bring you on that.
Yeah. Mr. McNeil, Is that one working?
It could be.
I'm working long. Mr. McNeil, I'm doing well.
How are you, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic.
Live show. I heard the ads. A live show.
Yes. Now, have you heard the show?
Well, I just got back from Chicago. I was down there for spring break with my daughter. She wanted to visit some colleges, so that was kind of
I'll accept that as a relatively, you know, acceptable apology or excuse.
Family time. What the hell?
You know, God, come on. It's not like you only have one. No. Sorry. Anyway, do you have one? Do you have two?
I have three.
You have three. All right. Okay. See, you got spares.
I'll call my daughter Greg today. That's where my mind is at.
I've learned to go through the age group. You know, yeah. I start with my wife, and if no one responds, then my first daughter's name, and then the second, and then the dog. Oh, no, actually, I start with the dog.
The dog. I do the. Oh gosh, I feel horrible too. It's like, come here, Sonny. I mean, daughter of mine.
It is funny. Have you ever heard the one where, not a joke, but it's just an idea, where you name your dog Stella?
No.
Yeah. That way you can just go out the back door and scream, Stella!
A streetcar named Desire.
And the alternative is, if it's a boy, Con. Come on, McNeil, you can do it.
Yeah, you did that. I can do that well. My dad named our dog Max. Now, through a house, if you say Max, what does it sound like?
Max! Max!
Oh, it
yeah,
does.
Yeah, Dad, it's like, oh, it's calling for the dog. Oh, that's good. All right, I'm going to go back to bed now, all right? Thanks, Dad.
One must be thoughtful in choosing pet names. I have the best, and then I'll leave, but I do have, I think, the best name for a pet. You ready?
What's that?
Clem Fandango.
Is he going to be running a casino in Morocco?
Quite possible. Really, the world is open for Clem Fandango. Yes, Clem Fandango.
What kind of dog of a breed are we looking at here?
I'm thinking the smaller the better this one. Okay. Either that or Bloodfang. But I'll leave you guys to figure out where Clem Fandango came from.
Bloodfang has to be the name of the sweetest, little, cutest, little fluffy ball dog.
Yeah, yeah.
What's your dog's name? Bloodfang.
I know. My wife has stopped me on every effort. She almost let me name one of the parakeets Bloodfang, but I didn't want to burn it on that.
Well, no, that's Bloodbeak. You know, if you're going to do it, come on. The show, live show is when?
Yes. Oh, thank you so much. Drink in the Style live. Did you like how I did the inflection?
Yes.
We recorded this past Saturday. We're doing it once a month. So the first Saturday of every month, and this is open to all, at the District Edina. 8 p.m. we serve cocktails. 9 p.m. we go on the air, and we broadcast live for an hour and a half. And then it is available as a podcast afterwards. I think we've got the first segment dropping today or tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll be getting that probably tomorrow.
Yeah, beautiful.
And then the second one the next couple of weeks. But yeah, seriously, man.
So I just want to make sure we understand this blood thing. We're gonna give you drinks first, and then we're going to do the live show.
Oh, 100%. Are you kidding?
Yeah, sure. What could go wrong?
You know, if you go, you can actually watch the video. Johnson, you put it up on YouTube.
That is correct.
Yeah, sir. Drink in the Style live.
That is correct. Yep, Drink in the Style live, the premiere.
You got to look for the live one, and you can see the mayhem.
All righty. Well, and mayhem, I think, is the right term. I think, as a matter of fact, there's a chapter in the FCC book about mayhem, particularly. We'll see how many we can touch on with that. So,
I know.
Before you step on out, I got to, Brett. You and I, we got to do
now
the business
transition.
Thing.
Here we go.
Yeah, this is radio broadcasting. Ooh. Anyway. Patrick Cooligan over at the Minnesota Reformer is joining you. What are you guys touching on today?
Yeah, today we are talking more about right-wing conspiracy theories, kind of piggybacking on what we talked about last week with right-wingers and their chemtrails. Now we got your buddy Draskowski thinking that squatters are trying to occupy every home in Minnesota.
Really?
And there's nothing you can do about it if you go on vacation for like 2 weeks. And
are those people? Squatters! Oh, no, those are squirrels. Squirrels, my bad. Oh, my God. Small gray. Okay, squirrels, yes. It's my bad. Draskowski's an idiot. Anyway, so got the conspiracy theories?
Then we'll be talking Patrick's column as well, talking about how legislators are maybe a little fearful of some local politicians when it comes to trying to get some reforms for affordable housing. A lot of these local cities don't want to give up local control, so we're talking that, and then their findings on what they've seen from the Minneapolis Police Department. Dina had five observations from their disciplinary report.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
So, that's this, what we got.
This show just turned into a Mike Griffith show, because Mike Griffith, you wouldn't know this because I'm old. Mike Griffith in the 70s would have like surprise guests all of a sudden show, oh my gosh, it's Frank Sinatra, you know, brings him on in. Greg, we could just, is Bach in here? Can we bring him on
in? We could bring Bach in. Here,
yeah, that's good. Gregory Rich, Greg Bach, we can bring them all in. We can just do our own version of the Mike Douglas show, but we'll plan that while we listen to Patrick Hooligan with Brett right here on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Brett Johnson with you on a Tuesday afternoon. And as usual on Tuesdays, we are joined by Patrick Hooligan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, as we're going to be talking about some of the stories that they've been working on, including this discipline dump that we just received from the Minneapolis Police Department. Dina Winter has five takeaways from that discipline dump that we'll be talking about. We will also be talking about Steve Drazkowski and his idea talking about how immigrants are apparently squatting in houses around Minneapolis, even though that's not necessarily true. We'll talk about that, as well as Patrick's column about local control and how many local cities are trying to use zoning ordinances and kind of technicalities to prevent affordable housing units from being built in their areas. So, Patrick, thanks so much for coming back on the show today.
Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. I want to start off talking about this report we received, or talking about the Minneapolis Police Department discipline dump that Dina Winter had a chance to write about, as she had five takeaways from this discipline dump that we just received. And basically what we learned from this is that, well, while some officers were disciplined, many others ended up leaving the force before their investigations were completed. And that includes one person that I think we're kind of familiar with, or at least people who listen to our show and our conversations, and that is Andrew Battelle, Sergeant Andrew Battelle, who was part of the SWAT team that ended up assaulting Jaleel Stallings in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder protests back in 2020. And at least my initial reaction as I was reading through what Dina wrote on this, Patrick, was how much things could have changed if, well, Jaleel Stallings really didn't appeal the initial charges that were against him and have a good attorney. Because from what I read through, obviously, the Minneapolis Police Department and their SWAT team really didn't follow any protocols whatsoever in this Jaleel Stallings case. And as we even look at Andrew Battelle, he's largely getting away unscathed because he left the force. So it's kind of shocking what could have happened if, well, Stallings had ended up not appealing what happened to him with the charges that were originally filed.
Yeah, from start to finish, this was bad procedure and misconduct on the part of a number of officers. They're riding around in a white unmarked van. They didn't announce themselves. And then they were just shooting it at civilians willy-nilly who were out after curfew. Stallings, an Army veteran, he had a permit for his gun. He thought he had listened to the governor of the state of Minnesota say that there are white supremacists roaming around the city. And so he thought he had been shot with a live round. He shot back. Once they piled out of the van and announced that they were police, he dropped his weapon. And they proceeded to beat him up anyway, including a fractured eye socket. They never actually filled out a use of force report on that incident, even though broken fractured his eye socket. There was another man there. They also beat down pretty well. And again, no use of force report until they were told that they had to do one. And as you said, there was all kinds of media originally around when there was media reports that that Jaleel Stallings had tried to kill police officers. Of course, what we learned later in the trial from police body cam video was that the police account was just wrong. Completely wrong, and Stallings was acquitted by a jury of his peers. And like you said, it's a good thing that he was able to afford a good lawyer who put up a strong defense, and he was acquitted. And then, even after he was acquitted, it wasn't until Dina Winter reported all of this, I think some weeks later, that the Minneapolis Police Department began an investigation. And so then they issued some discipline. But as you say, officers that left the force, some of them, by the way, received workers' comp or a duty disability retirement. They'll face no discipline. And then the other interesting thing here is that these events took place in May and early June of 2020. It's now 2024. So that's how long it takes to get the discipline meted out and to go through all of the appeals process. I think it strikes the average person as far too slow of a process. And in the process, what it translates into is that we have officers on the force historically who should have been disciplined much faster, including terminated. And as a result, bad stuff can happen in the meantime.
And we did have, at least as I was reading through what Dina wrote, we did have at least, well, interim chief at the time, Amelia Huffman, at least tried to discipline some of the officers. And then we also had another case of Sergeant Ronald Stevenson, who was a longtime officer who was fired back in April of 2021 after pepper spraying a Vice News reporter who had his hands up yelling press. But those seem to be more the exception to the rule. And even when you have interim chief Huffman trying to discipline these officers, it's very difficult to do. And as we talked about, it's a very, very lengthy process. And at the end of the day, if you end up leaving the force, oftentimes you're going to get away largely without facing any consequences whatsoever. And in fact, you could even still get some of that workers' comp money as you even leave the force. So that's kind of what I took away as well, is that if you are going to be under investigation, you might as well just leave the force, because there's a good chance you could probably still at least get some workers' compensation and then will not end up facing any legal consequences.
Yeah, and we found that repeatedly. And that's another aspect of Dina's reporting the last 2 years, or the hundreds of officers who have left MPD, and a lot of them with those settlements for post-traumatic stress disorder. So it's hit the city coming and going, because they've had to make significant payments and settlements to demonstrators, members of the media, other folks who were the mistreated during in the days after the Floyd murder. And then on the other side, they're having to make these payouts to the office, some of the officers who are leaving, and making the PTSD claims. So it's a big mess, and we again await the supervision of the United States Department of Justice.
And we wouldn't even know about many of these findings if not for the great reporting that Dina and the rest of you did over at the Minnesota Reformer. So we've only scratched the surface of what Dina wrote about today, again, titled Five Takeaways from the MPD Discipline Dump. Make sure you go check that out over at MinnesotaReformer.com. Want to move on now and talk about right-wing conspiracy theories, because this seems kind of fitting in light of all Republicans trying to highlight chemtrails last week. Well, we have another right-wing conspiracy, and this one is from Steve Draskowski, who thinks immigrants are trying to squat in Minnesota housing units and therefore are contributing to the affordable housing crisis in Minnesota. As a heads up, that's really not true. But this all stems from this Minnesota Senate bill that is being debated right now, and I believe was actually passed. It's called this Tenant Bill of Rights, which gives the tenants the rights, among other things, to organize, codify renters' rights to call emergency services without retaliation, outline remedies for tenants who can't move into their apartments on time due to construction, and it also allows individual taxpayer identification numbers to be used in place of Social Security numbers on rental applications, which is significant for people who are immigrants to this country. But Steve Draskowski, as I talked about, from this bill, somehow thinks that immigrants are squatting in Minnesota houses and therefore taking away housing options for many Minnesotans. But not necessarily true. But I'm curious, where is he getting this from, Patrick? Where is he pulling this information? Because I find it interesting that this is coming in light of Republicans talking about chemtrails as we seem to be going down a lot of these very right-wing conspiracy theory holes with many of these Republicans in the legislature over the past few weeks.
Yeah, one of the things that we consider a service to our readers is educating people about normal people about some of the kind of fever fantasies of the right wing and where they're coming from. And if you follow right wing media, and it's kind of bled into mainstream media in recent weeks, you'll see a lot of coverage of the threat of squatters, which is not to say that it's not a thing, and there are squatters that would sometimes wind up in abandoned buildings, especially, and that's unsafe. But the claim here is that people are crossing the border and, like, going into, they're going to be in your suburban home while you're on vacation, and you won't be able to remove them when you get back. It's ridiculous on its face. But it's kind of a great fear-based campaign, and it has a lot of roots in Libs of TikTok, which is kind of a famous social media account on the right. I think somebody made a video where he says, you know, come to America and you can just stay in people's houses and they can't kick you out. And Steve Drazkowski is a state senator, previously served in the House, where he formed his own kind of little freedom caucus there. And he's very plugged into the latest right-wing media frenzy and trend. And so he picked this up and tried to make an issue out of it yesterday. I think Minnesotans can rest easy that squatters are not on the hunt to move into your house while you're on vacation. And if you have a problem with people trying to live in your house, you'll be able to remove them pretty easily.
I think a police call would very much take care of that problem. But I guess if you were on a 15-year vacation, maybe squatters could take over, because at least according to Minnesota law, a person trying to claim property through our state's adverse possession law must have lived on the land for 15 years before they can claim it as their own. And can't say I have experience dealing with that, but I imagine there would be a little more involved in that than just living somewhere for 15 years and then saying it's your own. So, and by the way, there were no provisions with squatters' rights in this Minnesota Tenant Bill of Rights as well. So, yes, largely just pulled from conspiracy theories, as we so often see from the right wing, especially at the Minnesota State Legislature. You can read more about that and what Drazkowski was talking about over at MinnesotaReformer.com, MinnesotaReformer.com. And before we have to wrap things up, I do want to talk about your column, Patrick, because this piggybacks about what we talked about last week with trying to build affordable housing around the metro area, and how oftentimes we have local cities put in different ordinances or zoning regulations that largely prevent these affordable housing units from, well, getting built. And your title of the column is "Don't Trust the Locals. The Failure of Land Use Reforms at the Legislature is a Major Missed Opportunity." And what this bill at the legislature was going to do until, well, many of the legislatures got cold feet, was that it was basically going to give property owners more freedom to do with their land what they want, as the bill would ensure people could build duplexes and townhomes as well as bigger apartment complexes near transit, would also stop cities from acquiring minimum lot sizes in certain building materials for aesthetic reasons, which can drive up the cost of the building. So there were many other provisions as well that could have, well, made it cheaper to build affordable housing units, but oftentimes, as we talked about last week, local cities can put up different regulations and ordinances that make that very difficult to do. But you think this is a major missed opportunity from the state legislature, and it kind of was, because like many other states, including California and others, granted we don't have the same degree of problem in California in terms of affordable housing, this could have been a major step to trying to, well, reduce housing costs for people trying to build affordable housing. But it's interesting that it is kind of these local cities that are standing in the way sometimes, and they still do hold a lot of sway with members of our state legislature, both Republicans and Democrats.
Yeah, there was a lot of excitement and I think momentum going into the session about some statewide land use reforms. And as you said, this would override local cities' attempts to prevent development, whether it's affordable housing or even just market rate regular apartments and housing, which they do because if you create scarcity, it drives up values. So, you know, if you're in Edina, you don't want affordable housing near you. But for that matter, you don't really want a whole lot of development that could drive down any property values at all. So the idea here was, let's make it easier to build. Let's get rid of minimum parking requirements. As you said, some of these building materials, mandated building materials that are really just for aesthetics, all kinds of bespoke zoning controls so that giving really city councils the power to vote up or down on whether or not a developer can put an apartment building near a commercial zone or near transit, that this should be if somebody wants to build an apartment building in a commercial zone or near transit, they ought to be able to do that. So there was a lot of momentum. There was a really wide coalition of everybody from the Chamber of Commerce to Isaiah, which is a progressive kind of ecumenical group. And so I thought it had a lot of momentum. But those local governments and their lobbyists are really influential around the Capitol. And that's largely because I think a lot of legislators kind of they want to have a good relationship with the cities they represent. I understand that. I think they also view their city council members as potential opponents.
Yeah.
There was just too much opposition from local government. So it looks like they're going to have to wait on that until next year. But I think it's often the case that when you make big policy changes, it takes a few years. And I think a lot of people last year kind of were deluded into thinking we can do a lot in a very short amount of time, which they did last year. But the natural order of things at the legislature is things take time. They take years. And so I think this there are a couple provisions that might still get through. And then I think there's more to come in the future. And I think they got a good start on it this year. But again, make it easier to build. We can get more housing supply, which we need, which would stabilize prices or even bring prices down. And that would be a huge advantage for Minnesota as we try to attract people, either both to stay here and also to attract people from other places to move here, where housing costs are already lower than they are in other big states like Illinois or on the coast. And then we could drive that advantage to even greater levels. So we'll see what happens, but I think they want to make a little bit of progress this year and then come back ready for next year.
Yeah, what I find interesting about how these bills ended up largely not getting passed, at least for now, is that this really wasn't along the traditional left-right coalitions as to why a bill is not getting passed, because as you pointed out, there was a large coalition of people who wanted these bills to be built, including, as you mentioned, the Chamber of Commerce. I imagine many builders were probably in favor of this too, and I believe even some Republicans were on board. But again, still very powerful are those local city council members who, as you said, could end up being future opponents for state legislatures, and it doesn't really matter how big a coalition you have built and whether it's bipartisan or not. If you're having a threat of re-election, that sometimes can take sway. But yeah, I wasn't aware that this was such a bipartisan coalition, so you do wonder if they could eventually hold some sway in the future and try to, overcome the fear that, we're going to end up facing a primary opponent or a general election opponent that's kind of largely keeping some members a little more hesitant towards passing these types of bills and reforms.
Yeah, I think they've got the kind of coalition that can do the work in the interim between sessions to really strengthen that coalition, broaden it, and make it clear to these local governments that They need to get on board here. And they're more likely to, legislators are more likely to listen to their concerns if they become part of the process. And then we'll see what happens next year. But I think one of the great things about having a bipartisan coalition is that it doesn't matter if the House changes hands next year. I think you're still going to see some action on this issue.
You can read more about that column called Don't Trust the Locals. The failure of land use reforms at the legislature is a major missed opportunity. Interesting read, given that it's a different dynamic than we sometimes see when it comes to local control, because oftentimes when we think about that, we think of right-wing governments in red states trying to take control of blue cities, and well, this is a little bit of a different case, so make sure you check that out over at MinnesotaReformer.com. We have been speaking with Patrick Houlihan, who is the editor-in-chief of the Minnesota Reformer, talking about some of the news and stories that they've been working on. Again, MinnesotaReformer.com. Patrick, as always, appreciate the time today.
Always a pleasure.
All right, let's take a break and send things back over to Matt McNeil on AM 950.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, the Matt McNeil Show. All right, so we got a lot of things I got to get to here today yet before, and I got 20 minutes to do it. But first and foremost, let's give away a pair of tickets to go see Sexy Liberal over at the Pantages Theater on Saturday night, as well as this individual will win themselves a pair of passes to the pregame show at On the Rocks over at the Nicollet Diner, 13th and Nicollet. That starts at 4:30. The show with Sexy Liberal starts at 8. You could win a pair of tickets to both of those right now, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Caller number five. Caller number five, you're going to win a pair of tickets to both the show and the pregame event. Good luck with that. Caller number five, 952-946-6205. All right, so let me go first to what this whole thing with Jacob Fry, the mayor of Minneapolis, and this whole idea of trying to shame the city council into revisiting the Uber-Lyft legislation in regards to the wages for these individuals. Fry is urging the city council to reconsider possible compromises with rideshare giants Uber and Lyft as they threaten to leave the city in May. Fry held a press conference alongside disability and business advocates on Monday to call for the adjustment in the new rideshare ordinance. Fry said that the city policy on the matter should be based on data, not ideologies. I've said before, there's a million times when we enact policy, we should be trusting experts. When we push forward policy, we should be making it up ourselves. We shouldn't be making it up ourselves, but we should be listening to data and facts. The data the mayor is referring to is the state investigation, which that information was released the day after the city council made their call that looked into 18 million rides and rideshare pays and said the pay level up to $1.21 per mile and 49 cents per minute for a ride across the Twin Cities should meet the city's minimum wage level. The city's new ordinance instead has $1.40 per mile and 51 cents per minute. So not exactly the, we're talking, one of the things I want to make sure I point out here in regards to this whole thing is there's this mentality that 19 cents more, well, actually, and comparatively, it's 19 cents for the per mile charge and 2 cents per minute charge, that 21 cents extra per mile and per minute is somehow a deal breaker for most people that are trying to take Uber Lyft. This is the craziest part. There's a lot of people that just want to give Uber and Lyft an out here. And not just sort of say, okay, wait a second here. All right. When we passed the minimum wage law for restaurants, we knew that a hamburger price was going to go up. We knew that a side of fries price was going to go up. What happened? A lot of conservatives started screaming, it's a ghost town, even though they weren't down there because the places were still packed because nobody cared. I mean, if you're going out for dinner and the difference between the bill is $22 and $23.40, no one cared. It's, you make it seem as if the people using their discretionary income was like, I was ready to pay for a $3.50 beer, but a $3.75 beer? Well, I guess I'm staying home. Nobody does that. And I'm not saying it's great to people necessarily pay extra price, but when you know you're paying the people that are delivering the service for you a livable wage, it kind of goes down a lot easier. And so, and this is one of the things about this whole thing, because I used Uber in Chicago a bunch. And, they basically, you could tell a lot of these guys were haggard. I like the idea of us making sure there's a livable wage for Uber Lyft drivers in Minneapolis. And this idea that that Uber and Lyft couldn't just roll those costs into there's a lot of people giving Uber and Lyft an out here, and I just don't get it. The mayor reiterated he and every council member supports the increase in drivers' pay. However, he says the way this policy has been written, it's doing it without the facts. I should bring out the point, though, that he is the mayor has come in under some criticism for one comment in particular he made during the Monday press conference, in which he argued that allowing the new ordinance to take effect would be setting a precedent. Are we now planning on setting a minimum wage for every industry that comes forward? Are we setting a new wage for expenses for all tech workers, workers in fast food, and so on? While the ordinance passes, the council does set minimum wage rates for rideshare drivers. It only does so to bring in companies in compliance with Minneapolis's citywide minimum wage of $15.57, which is already in effect and is a standard that applies to all large employers. It was also pointed out the state study that the rideshare earners found that Twin Cities rideshare drivers are three times more likely to experience poverty. I don't know where you're going with this, but Mayor, with all due respect, of course we should be setting a minimum wage standard for all workers. Are you saying we shouldn't? I'm going to presume you just misspoke on this issue, but of course we should have a minimum livable wage standard for the city of Minneapolis. And shame on all of you guys that are out there that want to just skip over that point when it comes to Uber Lyft drivers. Well, they're asking for it. Like it's some sort of, consequence. No. There is one other element of this, which I'm boggled by. At this point, Mayor Fry, what are you doing? Uber and Lyft, you should consider them gone. If they don't want to, for some reason, roll this additional 21 cents per mile/minute into their costs, which, okay, fine. You don't want to do that, fine. But then treat them as they're going. You do realize there's a laundry list of other rideshare companies that want to come in and pay the living wage, right? So why are you sitting trying to carry the water for Uber Lyft at this point? Why are you not working with these new companies to get them set up, make sure they have the finances, make sure they have the business infrastructure, make sure they get the licenses they need? Why are you so intensely committed to Uber and Lyft and Uber and Lyft only? Stop it. What's done is done. And you basically refusing to go on out there and acknowledge the new reality that this is the minimum wage standard, which earlier in your own speech you said you agreed with, but thou in turn are trying to make an argument we shouldn't really have. Stop just catering to Uber and Lyft. You set the standard. If they don't want to work with it, fine. Then start working with the other people and saying, okay, here are people that are going to pay a livable wage. Help them and help them get up and running. Stop your belly aching and whining. There are more than just Uber and Lyft out there as far as options. And we are not the only city that's done this. Austin, Texas did this too. And yes, in Austin, Texas, there was a decrease in the amount of people using rideshare services. But the ones that do use rideshare services, they are getting the drivers are getting paid a livable wage. So I guess, why are you just so intent on, are you going to wait until the last day and just go, fine, I guess I'll find someone else? Because that's a really dumbass way to do it, Mayor, if I can be honest. You should be working with these new companies that want to come in and do the rideshare services and get them up and running as quickly as possible, as opposed to sitting there and having a pity party for yourself because your good buddies Uber and Lyft, they might leave town. I just don't get it. I don't get it. Patrick, do we have our winner on the tickets here?
We do. Steve in Minneapolis, you are coming on down to the Stephanie Miller Show. Not The Price is Right. The Stephanie Miller Sexy Liberal Comedy Tour, as well as the pregame show.
That's right. Pregame over on the Rocks down at Nicollet Cafe, 13th and Nicollet. We'll be doing that starting at 4:30, and then the show is at 8 o'clock at the Pantages. Congratulations, Steve. Now, tomorrow, reminder, tomorrow, I'm giving away a pair of tickets to both. It's a combo pack for one lucky winner. And Wheel of Destiny shows back up again. We're giving away five pairs of that night's kind of festivities. Five pairs of tickets to both events, the On the Rocks event and the Stephanie Miller Show. Five on Wheel of Destiny tomorrow afternoon. So make sure you're listening for that. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I did want to take some time here. Okay, so we heard Cooligan talking with Brett in regards to two stories I'm going to talk about, and I'll talk about one really briefly here. This is the Dina Winters story, which breaks down the discipline of the misconduct complaints of Minneapolis police in the post-George Floyd carnage that was out there. And can I just say this to the Minneapolis Police Department? How in the hell did it take you this long to release this? If you would have released some of this stuff earlier, I think people would have appreciated knowing that you guys were taking this, some of this stuff seriously. Because here it is. Justin Stetson, he was fired for using unreasonable force on Jaleel Stallings when he fired rubber bullets at him and then repeatedly hit him in the head and face for some 30 seconds, even though Stallings did not resist arrest. Christopher Dobbill, who was suspended for 40 hours for using unreasonable force on pedestrians, firing rubber bullets on them one block east of Stallings' incident, saying he thought they had looted a boarded-up building, but body camera video did not show they were involved in any activity and were just that would justify such a force. In fact, some of the people appeared to simply be walking down a sidewalk. They were, like I said, a hunting expedition, and they suspended the guy. Michael Osbeck, was suspended 40 hours for using unreasonable force against Stallings and Jackson, kicking Jackson twice in the hip, even though four officers had control of Jackson, and with one shocking him with a taser as he lay on the ground. Tyler Klund was suspended for 120 hours for not turning on his body camera video and for using unreasonable force by kicking Stallings, even though two other officers were already arresting him. He then knee-dropped Jackson's hip and punched his head several times, though other officers were already engaging with Jackson. Klund told investigators, "Once I heard gunshots directed towards our team, I feared for my life and my partner's. My sole focus was to quickly locate and arrest the suspects before any officer got hurt." Reminder, after they opened fire unannounced on the citizens of the city of Minneapolis. Michael Pfaff was suspended 80 hours for using unreasonable force and failing to activate his body camera as he responded to the Stallings incident. He stunned Jackson with his taser and tased the man 9 times in 54 seconds, even though two officers were already arresting him. 9 repeated applications was unreasonable on its face, Huffman wrote. We only learned about Huffman's disciplinary decisions. This is Amelia Huffman, who was in after, who took over the interim job before O'Hara got there. It was not released to the public until the full grievance process, which the police union can appeal decisions, is complete. And even then, the documents are heavily redacted. Arredondo did fire a police officer for pepper spraying a reporter, where it was the Vice News reporter who had his hands up yelling, "Press, press," and he got pepper sprayed. This is Ronald Stenerson. He admitted he did it, didn't document it, and didn't activate his body-worn camera before or afterwards. Some of the officers were able to leave and not really suffer any consequences. But needless to say, this took way too long. I couldn't agree with you more. It would have given the Minneapolis police... Don't get me wrong. I understand you've got a disciplinary process where the process itself is insulated from exterior sources. So why the hell you're not letting people know from the get-go, I'm suspending this guy, my recommendation is this, and letting people know you're at least doing something. And if I may make a suggestion to the Minneapolis Police Department, that's actually a much better way. Once again, you're not going into a public trial per se. You're facing discipline action for your actions within the police department, which is an insulated disciplinary process. So letting the people know what's going on, I don't think that that's a problem. Unless you're trying to hide things. And frankly, some of this stuff, I'm glad to hear you guys took it seriously. It should not have taken you 4 freaking years to let us know you were taking it seriously. For God's sakes. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I'll get to Squatter Boy here in just a second. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on your Tuesday. It's the Matt McNeil Show. All right. So you remember yesterday I was talking about, you know, chemtrails are not the reason why you're a virgin. Okay. So they're chemically castrating us. Okay. There's a difference between chemical castration and being a virgin. And the reason why you're a virgin is not because of chemtrails. You need to look in the mirror. It's likely you. Anyway, that was the kind of thing we were talking about. And I was brought that up because apparently Republicans have brought forth the Reddit ching that we're going to try to pass as legislation. And yeah, basically, I guess it was they were going to give sheriffs the ability to pull over an airplane. I don't know what they're trying to do. All I know is it really is coming from the bowels, and I do mean the bowels of the internet, conspiracy corners, and they're writing it as legislation now because they're crazy, okay? And when I think of crazy Republicans, Draz, yo, yeah, you little Plunkett, you are just a delightful little character. So if you heard Brett and Cooligan talking, that apparently there's a concern here that squatters, people living in a home without the owner's knowledge or permission, has become a talking point of the right in the recent weeks. We have one individual on video telling people how to squat in order to get access to housing adversely for someone who actually owns the house, Draskowski said, pointing to immigration as the source of the alleged problem. Draskowski was likely referring to a video shared by a right-wing Twitter account, Libs of TikTok, and boosted by Elon Musk in late March. In the video, Venezuelan TikToker Leonel Moreno tells his followers in Spanish that U.S. laws allow people to take up residence in unoccupied homes and claim them as their own property. That's actually not true. Some places, there are some interesting cases. I was watching the one case where the guy moved into a hotel room in New York and they could not evict him because he basically was he legally outmaneuvered them and was able to claim his hotel room as his residence. And they couldn't do it. But things like this don't happen like they imply they do. Shortly after Moreno's video went public, public mentions of squatters by right-wing politicians, commentators, and influencers skyrocketed, according to this. And once again, it just tells you a lot of these politicians, they're getting their talking points from psychopathic right-wing social media accounts like Libs of TikTok, okay? In Minneapolis, squatters had taken up residence in Stevens Square apartment complex last year. Fox 9 reported that officials attributed the fire at the vacant Minneapolis apartment building last week to squatters. But that was a vacant building that it wasn't like your house and you've gone on vacation and you come back and there's squatters. That's not how it works. There's no, and you sure as heck can't break into somebody's house on that kind of level. There's no evidence the squatters taking Minneapolis homes. There's also no evidence any of the Minneapolis squatting incidents involved immigrants. But needless to say, they shot down Draskowski's element here. I'll go back to what we said a few years ago. If you have a one-season cabin up north and someone tries to own it and live in it year-round, I think they've earned it, really, at that point. Native Roots Radio is coming up next. We are back on a Wednesday with Stein and Fugelsang. Till then, see ya!